Good morning. You're listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam, brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in every week on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show. My name is Mrs. Sam. I'm the children's librarian at Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. We have all sorts of wonderful books there for children of all ages and lovely crafting and story times besides. The weather is warm enough for us to have outside library programs. You can find information on all the events we hold for children and adults alike on our website, HotchkissLibraryofSharon.org, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/HotchkissLibrary. We are open by appointment for browsing and borrowing and computer use every day of the week. This week, Humphrey Rolston will be reading with me. Today, we are reading short stories provided by permission from Penguin Random House from their collection, Been There, Done That. This collection is all about how people come up with stories. First, I will read you the real-life account of what actually happened. Then, Humphrey will read the short story the author wrote about it. The story is called Small Treasures by Rita Williams Garcia. What really happened? I spent my early years in a high-rise of a far Rockaway housing project in Queens, New York, jailed inside my wooden playpen. My father, an army sergeant, was stationed in Korea for most of my first 2 years, while my mother worked days, leaving my sister, brother, and me home with a sitter who wasn't allowed to take us beyond our apartment's front door. My siblings and I made do. Rosalind and Russell had full run of our one-bedroom apartment, and run they did, while wooden alphabet blocks, an occasional picture book, and the constant antics of my brother and sister provided my entertainment. There was also Stanley, a corpulent roach named for Stan Laurel of Laurel and Hardy comedic slapstick fame, although in retrospect he should have been named for the heftier Oliver Hardy. My eyes followed Stanley without blinking, suspended by his quest to reach the ceiling, a ceiling I imagined with a hole that led to the outside. Once fascinated by an object, any object, I would stare for long periods, as if waiting for the object to do or become something amazing. No matter how faithfully I stared, or how high Stanley scaled our wall, he never made it to the escape hole without plummeting behind the sofa. Eventually, my father returned stateside with orders to relocate to Fort Huachua, Arizona, where my siblings and I discovered dirt and the great outdoors. We were explorers in a new world, a southwestern bajada with miles of lumpy sandscapes and low mountains, dotted with patches of desert scrub, pine trees, and cactus. Our first yard consisted of sun-blanched grass, prickly burrs, and plenty of rocks. Familiar sounds of honking cars, sirens, and newspaper boys barking out the arrival of morning and evening editions were replaced with the chatter of calls of crickets, desert fowl, and coyotes. Lizards, horned toads, and snakes were as plentiful as a New York apartment full of Stanleys. Even with rocks and cactus needles about, Rosalind, Russell, and I fell into our lot as barefoot pirates, digging around, an Easter egg pail and shovel our tools. Our first and only major find uncovered a dog's burrowed stash, a small bone, a metal shoehorn, and a sock. We might not have found any real treasure, but we had found a place that felt like home, and that was more valuable than any find. As was the norm for military life, moving was a constant for our family. We were settling into our desert home when my father received new orders to relocate farther west to Fort Ord, California. Our new environment wasn't the desert playground of Fort Huachuca, but there was no lack of the great outdoors. We moved into a yellow stucco house in an enclave of pastel-colored houses on Briggs Circle Street, an endless green lawn haven with no fences to separate the houses. We made friends and got into the swing of running across the green from house to house, pressing our noses against screen doors in search of kickball playmates. A good rain would keep us penned inside, but once the sun broke, we were outside, smelling the air rich with the scent of newly mown grass and red-brown soil, perfect for dirt clod bombs for neighborhood games of combat zone. In the middle of an explosive dirt barrage, I dug into a hunk of dirt and came up with a cat's eye marble. I sat and stared at my find, its swirl of yellow and blue at its core, while dirt bombs rained down on my head. Finally, I removed myself from the line of fire so I could stare into the cat's eye in peace. My siblings weren't too pleased with my desertion of the dirt war, and from that point on, I was labeled a game killer and a weirdo. Rosalind and Russell couldn't divorce me as a sibling and were stuck with me, especially during summer camp, which wasn't divided by age or grade. They were stuck with the weirdo sister who wanted to dig around and find some treasure. At camp, our teen counselors kept us distracted with math games, art projects, and long educational nature hikes. In the mornings, we played math games and worked on art projects. By noon, we were hiking among good oak and poison oak while identifying leaves, rocks, and animal droppings, but more important, searching for Indian artifacts. After hiking for about an hour, we'd build a campfire for wiener and marshmallow roasts using the twigs that had fallen on the ground as kindling and utensils. As for the educational component, our camp counselors told stories of Indians once native to our own Monterey County. The stories were equal parts ghost stories, California history, Native American cultural facts, and archaeology. The acorn-flinging oak trees and our crackling fire made compelling set dressing for stories about hunting, baking clay pots, and fishing in streams with obsidian spears. On one of our hikes, a camper had actually found a spearhead, which made us all sharp-eyed, eager to find the next flint spearhead or clay pot fragment on the next hike. Years later, after we'd left Fort Ord, then Seaside, then Fort Benning for civilian life, Rosalind confessed that our counselors had peppered the trail with fake objects. I was older by the time I learned the truth, but it didn't diminish the disappointment of having had the possibility of finding a small and valuable treasure taken away from me. In all my digging around, I never found more than a bone, shoehorn, a sock, a cat's eye marble, and some acorns, but it was always the possibility of uncovering a great find that kept me digging and hoping. Okay, so that was what really happened to Rita Williams Garcia, and here is the story, Finders Keepers.
Tyler Barron knew what he had to do. If he thought about it too long, he'd change his mind. What did his mom say? The best way to remove a Band-Aid was to rip it off. He opened his cigar box and took out his prized find. He didn't even unflap its protective flannel cloth to admire the arrowhead's point or haft, nor did he rake through his growing collection of tans, faint greens, pale pinks, and beige beauties for the feel of them. Just give it to her, he ordered himself. Get it over with already. Tyler wasn't careful with a lot of things, but he was careful with his find. He knew it was special. Not because he read the professor's book, but because he had found it himself. That's what made it special. Still, he kept it wrapped and tucked it inside the pocket of his polo shirt. Now, to get past his mother. Okay, bye, Mum. Miss Byron didn't look up once while she finger-scrolled down her tablet screen, but her lips curled. Say hi to Jewel for me. Tyler clearly heard, I told you so, in her sing-song. His mother had been there when he said that awful thing that made his only friend cry. It didn't matter that he'd spoken the plain truth when he congratulated Jewel for winning honourable mention. Nice art project, but Halima's was more interesting and Kim's was hands down the best. He said this knowing Kim was Jewel's art room rival and summer camp arch enemy. Jewel was so angry that Tyler thought she'd throw her clay sculpture at him, and Jewel had a rocket of a pitching arm on her. Still, Tyler refused to take back the truth, and his mother warned, some things are more important than the truth. Night, when Miss Byron found him staring at his wall, a habit that didn't go unnoticed or unteased by his peers, she fanned her hand before his face to jolt him out of the stare. Where are you going to get another friend like Jewel? She asked. For reasons Tyler pretended to not care about, he was virtually friendless, if it weren't for his stepbrothers, cousins, and Jewel. Okay, Tyler said as he walked to the door. And say hello to the professor. which was what she called Jules' father. Mr. Perry wasn't a full professor yet, but it was his mother's way of mocking him. It wasn't entirely his mother's fault. Mr. Perry was mockable. For whatever reason, their parents didn't like each other, but Tyler and Jewel never let that get in the way of their friendship. 111 steps to the Perry house. About 52 when he ran. Today, Tyler was feeling very sorry because he was lonely and a little angry because he had to give away something he treasured to make things right. His anger got him across a green, rain-soaked lawn that merged their backyards. He leapt over one of the round petunia-filled flower beds that flanked both sides of the brick patio's edge. Including the leap, he counted 109 steps. Tyler pressed the button next to the screen door. The bell chimed, but no one answered, although he could hear the clatter of dishes. He rang again. Jewel appeared before the still-closed screen door, her arms crossed and locked over her chest. She was wearing her cool face, which meant they weren't friends. Her hands were soapy. "What do you want?" "Still mad?" She tossed her head to the side. "Won't you at least come out here?" he pleaded. "Who is it, Jewel?" asked a deep voice from inside. It didn't matter that the Barons and the Perrys had lived across the lawn from each other since Tyler and Jewel were four, when they had both had a mother and a father. It didn't matter that Tyler and Mr. Perry shared an interest in finding hidden treasure. Jewel's father always seemed grumpy, and for that reason Tyler was a little afraid of him, whereas his mother was not. "No one," Jewel answered her father. "Tell no one. You have dishes to wash." Tyler still asked, "Then can I come in?" "No," Jewel said. Her arms were crossed and hugged her ribs tightly. "Then come outside." She didn't answer. "Please," he said, "I brought you something." "Jewel," said the deep voice. Jewel sighed, dismissing her father's bellow. She opened the screen door. Not an invitation for him to enter, but just enough to receive the peace offering. "What is it?" Jewel asked. Tyler smiled. This was a good sign. "I'm giving you the best arrowhead from my collection." He took the prize from his breast pocket, unwrapped the flannel cloth, and presented it to her, open-handed. He watched her lean over for a better look. She looked at him, and then took the arrowhead. It was going wrong, although Tyler couldn't see why. "This is supposed to make everything all right after what you said in front of everybody?" She seemed angrier at the arrowhead than she was at him, which took Tyler by surprise. She was supposed to make the sound that he had made when he found it at the riverbank. She was supposed to make the sound of knowing it was a rare and beautiful thing. "You could put a string around the haft and wear it like a necklace, but you'd have to be careful because..." Before he could finish warning her that she could lose the arrowhead if she didn't tie the string just right, Jewel gripped the projectile, lifted her arm, and hurled the arrowhead into the flowerbed of petunias like a baseball at a catcher's mitt. "Hey!" he shouted. "Stupid rock!" she shouted back. "Stupid rockhead!" She stepped away and slammed the screen door. Tyler ran to the flower bed and fell on the ground. There were at least a million purple and red flowers in the flower bed, and his arrowhead was swallowed up somewhere down in that dirt. He snatched off their purple and red trumpet heads, yanking up whole plants, stems, leaves, and roots out of the soil. As if the flowers weren't enough, the flower bed was thick with leaves, yucky, sticky leaves. He'd wipe his hands later. Tyler yanked and pulled until he could see clear patches of soil. That stupid Jewel had hurled the arrowhead like a missile. The arrowhead had to have sunk into the oozy, loose soil point first. At least she hadn't pitched it far out into the lawn, or even worse, against the red brick patio, scratching or chipping it. Tyler had to be careful. He didn't want to damage the arrowhead, if it wasn't damaged already. But now that she had thrown it away, the arrowhead was once again his. His Why he thought Jewel would treasure it, he didn't know. And offered his best treasure to boot, even when he hadn't done anything wrong to begin with. He used his fingers to rake across the near headless flower bed dirt, back and forth, and then finally the tip of his pointer finger made contact with stone. Now was the time to exercise care. He dug around it, then under it, just as he had the afternoon he got caught in a rain shower at the river bank. There had been nowhere to run that day to escape the rain, so Tyler had laid down in the dirt and curled himself in a ball, letting the rain pelt him until the storm ended. When he pushed himself up, he felt a tip of some kind prick on his hand. He knew to dig around the pointy thing with a twig. He had read it in Alabama Arrowheads and Artifacts, written by the professor. They lived in the heart of Alabama, where, according to the professor's book, Indians had lived thousands of years ago and had left behind a treasure trove of arrowheads and other artifacts. Tyler had uncovered a beauty of an arrowhead that had blackened over time and was brownish near the tip. It flared and curved and was flaked with tiny dents. The best part was that the haft was intact on both sides. All of Tyler's other arrowheads had come from flea markets and museum gift shops. He'd found this one himself. When he returned home, soaked and muddied from the rain and delirious from his find, his mother was only concerned with getting him cleaned up and warm and hadn't heard a single word of his excited rambling or bothered to look at the arrowhead. When he told the professor he had made a real find, thanks to his book for junior archaeologists, the professor, who wasn't in the best mood, had said, "Good for you," and didn't ask to see it. But when Tyler had shown the arrowhead to Jewel, she gasped, "Beauty, and would make a great necklace." Later, Jewel had shared a secret with Tyler. She said the other professors in her father's archaeology department always made cracks about his children's book. That night, Tyler had torn off a piece of his flannel PJs, cut it down to a small square, and wrapped the perfect arrowhead within it, then placed it in his cigar box with his flea market and gift shop arrowheads. "What have you done to my yard?" The professor glared down at him. "Boy, you are in big trouble. We'll see what your mother has to say about this." Tyler stood up. "Jewel threw it in the flowers, but I got it back." Tyler opened his hand wide. The mostly blackened rock stood out against his soil-caked palm. The professor went silent the second Tyler's hand opened. He peered closer, and before he could reach or ask, Tyler clamped his fingers around his prize, turned, and ran home. Ms. Byron was still scrolling through her tablet when Tyler pushed open the back door and stomped past her. He didn't want to talk about it, but his mother was right behind him, fussing about his filthy clothes. "I tried," he said, wanting to leave it at that. "And?" she asked, and managed to get his polo shirt over his head in one upward pull. "She nearly destroyed my arrowhead. She threw it in the flowerbed, but I got it back." His mother giggled. "You tried to give Jewel one of your rocks to make up?" Tyler huffed and opened his hand and said, "Look." He'd run so fast he hadn't bothered to wrap the arrowhead back in its protective piece of flannel. 43 steps. Like the professor, his mother became quiet. She looked even closer. "Tyler, baby." This wasn't good, Tyler thought. She only called him baby when he was injured or sick. "Tyler, this doesn't belong to you. I found it." "I know," she said. "But I don't think this is something you can keep back, and that this wasn't over." She left him. Tyler was too mad to stare at the wall. "Finders keepers," he told himself. "It's a rule." He heard a tap on his window and felt a shadow. As if he couldn't be madder, he pulled back the curtain. "What do you want?" Jewel flapped her arms, a plea to raise the window. He huffed, but released the lock and pushed up the window. In spite of himself, he helped her pull her inside, as he'd always done. "What do you want?" "To warn you." "About what?" "They're going to take your arrowhead." "Who? Your dad?" She nodded. "I heard him talking to the archaeology department. Then he was on the phone with the Native American Museum. I think everyone's excited about the arrowhead. That thing is old, like 10,000 years old. And it's from the Southeast Indians. That's what my dad says. So it's not yours." "I found it," Tyler repeated. "But that doesn't make it yours." "It's not fair," Tyler said. "Finders keepers." "But it's the truth," Jules sang. "It's mine. You were going to give it to me. You threw it away." Jules shrugged. They said nothing for a while. "Tyler," Jules said. "What?" "Truth hurts, doesn't it?" He slugged her in the shoulder, but not hard. They sat and admired the arrowhead, its brownish, blackened, curved, dinted body, its perfect haft and intact point against the plaid flannel square, until Tyler broke out a video game. Miss Byron and the professor had been talking in the other room for at least 3 full levels of Gemfinder. That had to be a record, Jewel noted. Tyler agreed. Their parents' voices neared Tyler's bedroom door. In less than 4 steps, Tyler would have to hand the arrowhead over. "Stupid Band-Aid."
Thank you for listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam. This week we read Small Treasures by Rita Williams Garcia and Finders Keepers, her short story. Her short story was read by Humphrey Rollinston, and we're here every week at 8:30 a.m. on WHDD 91.9 FM. All sounds in this recording are from freesound.org.